Sounds good to me.
I have kissed your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream.tv. It's Ustream.tv, and then look for Gary Null, and then you'll see us in the studio here. And we have our two new studios. The big one we'll be broadcasting from shortly. A lot of you have probably not been able to get on the air here for the last week. Let me explain what has happened. Two things. One, I was invited to do a radio interview. I never really ask about the place that I'm being interviewed. They simply say, Gary, today you got two or three or one program, and I just do them every day. And this one was with a reverend. He wanted to talk about Seeds of Death, the multi-award-winning documentary on genetic engineering. I said, fine. Whether it was a debate or just a discussion, I didn't know. I don't really care. I go on to talk about it. And it was supposed to be a short segment, 10 minutes. It lasted an hour and a half. In fact, it lasted till I had to go live on my own noon show. And during the commercials, I could tell that it was from a Christian broadcasting group. They're huge. You have no idea. They dwarf in size of listenership, both the conservative and the liberal media. So anyhow, I had mentioned several times that if people wanted more information on health issues, they could tune into the show. Little did I know how many people would be tuning in. At the same time, an important documentary that has been a major fundraising hit on PBS stations throughout America. In fact, 38% of all PBS stations are playing it not just once, but many times. In Philadelphia, in Dallas, Houston, Denver, Atlanta, all over. And in there, I talk about coming over and listening in on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Well, it just happened to have all aired at the same time. We have had a couple of occasions in this 9-year history of the Progressive Radio Network where we had to expand our bandwidth. We were not prepared for how many we guesstimate hundreds of thousands of new listeners came on. Now, normally we get about averaging 6,000 brand new listeners every day. That's more than Bill O'Reilly gets on Fox, as an example. That's more than anyone else I know in radio in the United States. To give you an example, we get more new listeners in a week on this program than some non-commercial radio stations have total of all their 24/7 in a week. So that's why you couldn't get on. The good news is we've expanded our bandwidth, and hopefully this won't happen again. Though now we have hundreds of thousands of new listeners, and the feedback we're getting is they didn't know this information existed. They were clueless on these health issues, environmental issues, and so I'm happy for that. Sorry for the inconvenience. Today, the latest on health and healing. Why soy is good for protecting against colon cancer and avocados are good for your heart. Also today, why kale should be consumed because it has more vitamin C than even an orange. Always the latest on health and healing, always cutting edge. Then for those people in the government and major corporations who have told you that a product is safe because it was animal tested, they have been wrong. Virtually all animal testing is now in disrepute. Who says so? And why this should concern us? And why they've been mutilating and harming millions, hundreds of millions of animals over the decades? I'll get into that. The CDC has finally had to admit what we first spoke on this program, and what I first spoke in an article, that they knew that nearly 100 million Americans were given vaccines that contained known cancer-causing agents, and they hid it. They covered it up. Now, when you go to their website to see what they had made public, they hid it again. But we got the information while it was still on their site, so I'll tell you about that. Also, if time permits today, climate change is getting worse, but now the new cycles on the sun are occurring, and we could be in for a big solar blast in the next 4 weeks. I'll explain why, and this is not me saying this, this is NASA saying this, and I'm going to show you the consequences to our electricity. Also today, an in-depth discussion on what I consider the inability of the media to understand what it means to be suffering and poor in the United States. My comments are directly related, and my commentary, and my personal research, to Bill O'Reilly for his tirades that many would consider extraordinarily insensitive, at the least, and volatilely racist at the worst. Mr. O'Reilly, you consider yourself a king of a network, but your information is wrong. Your biases are obscene. Today I will deconstruct the myths that you've been perpetrating. I was out of town. I was not watching television. When I came back and I saw this, I had to address it. My commentaries, as well as Chauncey DeVega, Why Elites Want to Mask the Suffering of Poor Whites. That's where we're going today. I will not have time for calls. I have a lot to go through. Let's begin. There are more than 6,000 articles in the peer-reviewed literature on the benefits of soy. Now, of course, when I talk about something, this audience knows I mean organic or non-GMO. And it also means that when you're eating an item, you're not eating it as the dominant food item. You're having a variety of foods in your diet. So therefore, if I have soy, let's say I have some grilled tofu or tempeh, it's once in a while. It's not every day. Therefore, it's not as if you're going to threaten goiter or thyroid conditions by having a predominance of it in the diet. But having some soy in the diet is extremely beneficial, unless you have a preconditioned medical situation where that would prohibit you. Here's the latest in the University of Illinois. Quote, scientists have evidence that lifelong exposure to genistein, a bioactive component of soy foods, protects against colon cancer by repressing a signal that leads to accelerated growth of cells, polyps, and eventually malignant tumors. Quote, in our study, we report a change in the expression of three genes that control an important signaling pathway. This is according to Dr. Chen, the University of Illinois Professor of Food Science and Human Nutrition. Now, just in lay language, the cells in the lining of the human gut turn over and are completely replaced every single week. However, 90% of the colon cancer patients, an important growth-promoting signal is always on, leading to uncontrolled growth malignancies. And this particular study showed how soy-rich diets can prevent that. Quote, the good news is that a diet rich in soy genistein represses those signals through epigenetic modifications at the regulatory regions of those genes. So, one more reason that if you're having your protein shake with soy protein, you're helping yourself in a tremendous way. Now, mind you, that's only one study. A few years ago, the Weston Price Foundation, which advocates a very high meat animal-based consumption diet, was talking about the dangers of soy. I asked to debate their leading scientist. In a series of 3 1-hour debates, he laid out his arguments against soy I laid out my arguments based upon the scientific literature. Here's the difference. He cherry-picked a few, just a handful, of studies that showed in some people who have goiter or have a thyroid condition, excessive soy can contribute to that growth, and he is correct. That is an extraordinarily rare situation. What he did not look at was the 5,500 studies in the peer-reviewed literature, take away any that are sponsored or in any way controlled by the soy industry to eliminate their bias, and look at independent science. 99% of the studies show that soy is beneficial for your heart, for women's hormone levels, for preventing cancer, not just the colon, but breast cancer as well, prostate cancer as well, lung cancer, how you live a longer life, and how the Chinese and Japanese that have had a predominant amount of soy in the diet, far more than any American would have the longest lifespans in the world. The Japanese do as a country. They're the longest live. In fact, they will live 10 to 12 years longer on average in health versus Americans. And their diet is substantially soy. So take out the bias, look at the science, and you see there's good reason to use healthy soy. But there's something else we don't eat in America because of our bias against fat. For good fats, avocado is a good fat. Coconut is a good fat. Sesame seeds is a good fat. Walnuts, almonds, pistachios, macadamias, all outstanding fats. These fats protect your heart. These fats help turn off viruses, like coconut oil turns off viruses in the body. Anyone that I counsel who's suffering from viral infections, I'm going to make sure that they get the antiviral properties of that coconut fat. But a lot of people don't have the awareness that not all fats are the same. If you're looking at the arachidonic fat of a piece of meat or pork, yeah, that's bad. That'll clog your arteries. There's nothing good about that. Or the trans fats from French fries, from deep frying, that's bad. So let's distinguish good and bad. Now we get to the latest study from the Cancer Treatment Centers of America on avocados. And here's what they have to say about this. Quote, avocados are actually very high in vitamin E and lutein, which is a carotenoid that has been shown to lower your risk of breast cancer and prostate cancer. The fruit is also high in monounsaturated fats, by the way, as is olive oil. That's a monounsaturated fatty acid, which have been shown to prevent heart disease. It actually lowers your bad cholesterol and increases your good cholesterol. And those who are looking to take care of your skin and eyes would do well to eat avocados, which are high in copper. Copper is also good for your skin and your eyes. And it's an important micronutrient. So, that's the latest on why we should have avocados to prevent cancer. Now, I'm sure that you've gone into the health food store and you've seen any number of boxes of dried kale. Normally, they simply dry them in a simple dehydrator. You can have a small dehydrator, or you can build one, you know, that's 10 feet across if you want a commercial one. I was in this small kitchen of the restaurant that started this whole craze. And this was not long ago. We're only talking about in the last 3 years. And when I'm looking at how small the kitchen was, it was only about twice the size of this studio. They had one dryer, not big. It would fit on most people's dining tables. And all day long, that thing was drying kale. And then they would season the kale as it was drying, and so the seasoning would bake in. And they would generally take cashews, and they would soak the cashews overnight, like making a cashew milk or a cashew butter. And then they would blend that with some savory spices, chives and garlic and cayenne pepper. And then that would kind of, and maybe if they put oregano on it, then it would kind of be like a pizza taste. And so they started off and they had some success. In fact, I was so impressed with their ingenuity that I ordered some into New York to my own store. And I said to the woman, I said, you realize that within 3 months of this becoming popular, you will have 100 different people clamoring to do the same thing. So my suggestion is that you have differentiation. She said, what's that mean? I said, well, when you're successful with something, you're always going to have copycats. So don't just rely upon one thing. Have an entire line. And bring each one of the items in your line out about 3 months apart. So you're always ahead of your competition. I don't know if she did that or not. All I know is today there are at least 200 different companies that are doing dried kale. But there's 100 items you could dry. But kale's the issue. Well, kale is a good item. Now, most people never eat kale because it's kind of tasteless. Doesn't really have any taste. And steaming kale really doesn't taste good at all, in my opinion. But if you saute kale with some garlic and onion and Himalayan pink sea salt and pepper, it tastes delicious. So here's the latest on kale. Quote, kale is a cruciferous green leafy vegetable with several varieties, curly kale, ornamental kale, and dinosaur kale, all different in taste, texture, and appearance. It's high in fiber, antioxidants, carotenoids, lutein, which is good for your eyes, 45 different flavonoids, phytochemicals like quercetin, which combats inflammation, and sulforaphane, which fights cancer, end quote. By the way, it also acts as a great anti-inflammatory. It has twice the vitamin K as other cruciferous vegetables, and it contains great amounts of tryptophan, calcium, magnesium. In fact, you can get more calcium and magnesium and potassium out of kale by dry weight than you can a glass of milk. And it has more vitamin C than an orange. So, you're getting vitamin A, the omega-3 fatty acids. So on all levels, kale is terrific. Also, lowered oxidative stress and reduced DNA damage linked to specific supplements. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. And what it shows is this, that there are some antioxidants that can actually reverse and prevent DNA damage. And this was a good-sized study, and here are the ones that they really highlighted. Glucosamine, chondroitin, fish oil, MSM, coenzyme Q10, ginseng, garlic, ginkgo, salt palmetto, all of those enhance antioxidant activity and reduce oxidative stress. It means they help protect the white blood cells and protect the DNA and increase the DNA capacity for reversing damage. By the way, this is from George Mason University. It's an important study published in the peer-reviewed journal Retrobiology. Quote, findings of this study suggest a possible role for genistein, a compound that occurs in soybeans in combating human immunodeficiency virus, HIV infection. Genistein is a trypsin kinase inhibitor which blocks communications from cell surface sensors to their interior. This communication process is hijacked by HIV so that the virus can send signals into the cells which enable its entry. And in this one, they found that the, quote, instead of directly acting on the virus, genistein interferes with the cellular process that are necessary for the virus to infect cells. So, one more reason, if you have AIDS or AIDS-defining illnesses, genistein would be beneficial for you. And finally, chocolate, from another study published in the American Academy of Neurology's journal Neurology, quote, drinking, this is from Harvard Medical School that put this out, drinking 2 cups of hot chocolate a day may help older people keep their brains healthy and their thinking skills sharp. According to the study, the average age of the people were 73. They did not have dementia. And when they were taking their hot cocoa for 30 days, they found that there was an improvement in learning and blood flow to the brain, and that affects thinking skills, according to MD, PhD, Dr. Soron of Harvard Medical School and a member of the American Academy of Neurology. So one more reason that organic chocolate in any form is really good for you. You remember I've been talking at some length in some of my opening commentaries about how early life experiences can impact us later in life, and that even in the feel-good hormone, how that actually has a dark side, because you're going to react not only to pleasure through the comfort of words and statements and feelings that people share with us, the hugs, the kisses, the bonds. And by the way, athletes get this all the time. If people are curious, why do athletes, you know, go to such extents to high-five each other and pat each other on the back? That's bonding. You know, when you do something good, you're lifting weights, and the guys are all around you, and you're trying to go for, you know, a heavier weight or more reps, and they're your cheerleaders. You know, they're you feel that bond you have with them. That actually increases the feel-good hormone. And therefore, the association of working out with other people in an encouraging way is positive. If you've ever been in the park on Sunday morning where we have our running and walking club, and all of our coaches, we have about 20 coaches, and we have Jimmy, and we have John Q, who's sitting here in the studio with me, and you hear them, it's all about encouragement. You know, you can do it, you know, and you start getting that feeling. Now, go into a New York City marathon where you've got 2 to 3 million people cheering you on. You feel that, because I've been in marathons where there are no spectators, none, like the Marine Corps marathon. First one, there wasn't anyone there, not a person. And you don't have that energy from the people. That's an exchange of energy. Here's the latest in this ongoing discussion, and I'll just get into it for a minute here. Quote, how DNA is reprogrammed, listen to the words, reprogramming your DNA, something we were told could never happen. All of science said it's impossible. Whatever your DNA is, it is. Whatever you're born with, that's what you die with. You can't change it, you can't alter it. They were all wrong. All the scientists in the world were wrong. Every one of these nut jobs were wrong. They were all wrong. Here's the latest. How DNA is reprogrammed by words and frequencies. Quote, we now know that just as on the internet, our DNA can feed its proper data into a network of consciousness and can call up data from the network and also establish contact with other participants in the network. In addition, there's evidence for a whole new type of medicine in which DNA can be influenced and reprogrammed by words and frequencies without cutting out and replacing single genes. After thousands of years of being disconnected from higher dimensional frequencies, our DNA is finally breaking free from old patterns which have been stuck in a universal time matrix. However, humans will soon know and understand why 97% of our DNA has a higher purpose and why its transformation is leading us into an awakening that we never could have imagined. The human genome is packed with at least 4 million gene switches that reside in bits of DNA that once were dismissed as junk, but it turns out that the so-called DNA junk plays critical roles in controlling how cells, organs, and other tissues behave. The discovery, considered a major medical and scientific breakthrough, has enormous implications for human health and consciousness because many complex diseases appear to be caused by tiny changes in hundreds of gene switches. As scientists delved into the so-called junk parts of the DNA that are not actual genes containing instructions for proteins, they discovered a complex system that controls genes. At least 80% of this DNA is active and needed. And another 17% has higher function scientists are still decoding. And by the way, the Russians were the first to discover this. Now, what does this mean in lay language? How does this impact you and I? Because how often do we act on lower impulses? Greed, fear, manipulation, lying, deceiving, fighting, emotional violence, which in my opinion is tantamount to physical violence, because the scars are left are just as deep. Where does that come from? Why is it that so many people repeat patterns of behavior ad nauseum and then take no responsibility for it? If they do, it's flippant. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I hurt you? Did I say the wrong thing? Well, yeah, you did. And you've done it 100 times. Why can't you understand that doing more of this doesn't make me want to be around you or with you because you're sharing the wrong energy? And yet these people, and we all know them, they're in all of our lives, they just can't get it. And that's because the DNA is not switched on, it's switched off. Why? Because words and frequencies of words, how someone speaks with us, how we are related to, will definitely and directly impact the message inside of the DNA. So you have three things to consider. First, you have a DNA that we can now prove absolutely, unequivocally, can be turned on or off. There's a whole area of science now that is awash in new discoveries called epigenetics, and we can thank Dr. Bruce Lipton for being the father of that. But we also know from Dr. Stanley Krippner and other brilliant men that what they didn't know about epigenetics, they knew about intent. So if you have the wrong intent, that changes the energy of what you express to another human being. And that's why we sometimes get that strange feeling and we think, it just doesn't feel right. Well, if it doesn't feel right, more often than not, it's our intuition, our DNA telling us it isn't right. This isn't aligning. This isn't matching up. So don't go this way. And by the way, in my own career, the mistakes I have made are when I went against my own intuition, thinking, can I make something happen by sheer will and positive reinforcement and encouragement and coaching? Can I put all that to play and change an outcome? And I will honor my results. I have never had success once in my life doing that. I wished I could tell you that I did. Yesterday, I'll give you one little example. Yesterday I was counseling some people. I gave about an hour to each one of three people in the afternoon. One person had terminal cancer, but also other conditions were equally bad. And the first thing I said is, what do you want? What kind of outcome are you expecting? Well, I want a good outcome. Well, be more specific. What would you like to see happen? Well, I don't want these conditions. All right, that there's a difference between not wanting a condition there versus wanting to be optimally well. Do you want to be healthy? Yeah, of course I do. How healthy? Well, I want to be absolutely healthy. You sure about that? Immediately, my gift, that energy said, no, this person was not being honest with me. But I went ahead as if they were, and I gave them everything they would need to get themselves healthy. And I asked maybe four or five times, are you now prepared to start new and only make positive choices? Absolutely. Do you have a support group or system or person that can help you? Yes, that person was in the room with them. I said, okay, so do I understand that you're going to give yourself 100% commitment to making healthy choices? Yes. Do you feel confident that what you have in your hand now enables you to do that? Absolutely. Good. Then you should see some changes in about a month. And then we'll reassess. About an hour later, I went downstairs. The person was sitting in a little restaurant called a five-napkin hamburger, chomping on hamburger, drinking a cola, and having french fries. The very thing that caused their illnesses. So, when I walked by, they didn't see me. And I'm thinking they could have walked up the street and got themselves some juice. Now, there is where we don't want the pain and suffering of something that's wrong in our life. We don't want to be a victim even of our own bad choices, but we're not willing to turn the genes on to its higher consciousness. And that's the message in that study. That it's not just turning a gene on or off, that's a stage, but your true intent and determination and discipline require that. And we're not willing to be disciplined. Americans are not disciplined when it comes to themselves. They can be disciplined in other ways. And everyone masters things that do require a certain effort of discipline. But then, when it comes to themselves, that's where they drop the ball. So once you develop the discipline to say, yes, I will change, then it's, are you going to be consistent? Are you going to find an excuse or rationalization not to? And here's how it works. Now, here's where most people fall off the wagon in life. Their DNA already is programmed to find a rationalization to fail. Let's just say that you want help, and you go to a holistic doctor or holistic nurse, and they give you the best that they can and what you need. If you really don't want to change, if your conditioning says no, you'll find a reason not to. Well, I didn't like the way the doctor talked, or I didn't. You'll find something that justifies you saying no. You'll see this at yoga camps. You'll see this at spiritual retreats. And you ask, why are you here? Why? You keep pointing out everything that's wrong. You don't look for anything that's right. It's too hot. Or it's too cold. Or it's too rainy. But what does that matter? You're here. There are lessons here. Why don't you get with the program? But they can't, because their DNA is already programmed to find an excuse that allows them to rationalize that they are continuing to be a victim. So when you're around people that are always pointing to themselves and always talking about their problems and how they feel, that's a person whose DNA is not only locked in the off position, but then it's functioning from the lower end of the message inside their DNA. And those are the people I've never been able to help, not one in my entire life. I wished I could take credit and say I've helped people. I have not. The people I have helped, and I can only imagine how many there are the ones who are willing to surrender the old message and put a new message in. That takes discipline. It's not going to happen overnight. It might take you a year or two or three. And you have to be consistent, otherwise you self-sabotage. But those are the people who are going to the higher consciousness within their DNA. They're looking for the higher message, the universal method, the universal truth. Those are the people who I've seen reverse cancer, reverse AIDS, reverse heart disease, come out of bankruptcy. I don't care what obstacles they have in life, they overcome them. So there's a reason why a lot of people are emotional bottom feeders who stay in the gutter. You pick them up out of the gutter, you give them everything they need, they'll jump right back in that gutter and blame you for having helped them. Now we know more why. What happened earlier in life. Even how they were spoken with by their parents, the tone of their voice, the type of energy the parents shared. That's why we have to also exercise compassion and empathy for these individuals. But now we can understand why they continue to do stupid things all the time. I'm Gary Nall. That's the first part of our program, over a half hour on health, healing, and the mind. Now we're going to do a couple quick things. First up, this is the newest thing from the Independent Science News, a very respected journal by Pat Dutt and Jonathan Lethem, PhDs. Quote, new scientific research has cast grave doubt on the safety testing of hundreds of thousands of consumer products, food additives, and industrial chemicals. Everyday products, from soft drinks and baby foods to paints, gardening products, and cosmetics and shampoos, contain numerous synthetic chemicals as preservatives, dyes, active ingredients, or as contaminants. Official assurances of the safety of these chemicals are based largely on animal experiments that use rabbits, mice, rats, and dogs. But new results from a consortium of researchers and published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences suggest that results are worthless. Let me repeat that, worthless. The results of these experiments challenge the long-standing scientific presumption holding that animal experiments are of direct relevance to humans. For that reason, they potentially invalidate the entire body of safety information that has been built up to distinguish safe chemicals from unsafe ones. The new results arise from basic medical research, which itself rests heavily on the data and idea of treatments that can be developed in animals and transferred to humans. According to Christy Sullivan, Director of Regulatory Testing Issues at Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, This is not unusual. Quote, about 90% of all pharmaceuticals tested for safety in animals fail to reach the market or are quickly pulled from the market. Wanting to understand why this might be so, the consortium decided to test the effects of various treatments that lead to inflammation and systemically compare results between mice and humans. This postulated correlation across different animal species is sometimes known as the concordance assumption. The research originated when investigators noted that in their medical specialism of inflammatory disease, which includes diabetes, asthma, and arthritis, drugs developed using mice have to date had a 100% failure rate in almost 150 clinical trials on humans. And it goes on from there. So, for those of you, like myself, who believed that we should not be using what are called vivisection concepts, we should not be using animals, all of animal research has now been disproven. It's all quackery. Hundreds of millions of animals sacrificed for nothing. The entire field of the so-called consumer product safety, worthless. All of it. And you heard it first here today. One other thing. That hourly wages fell 3.8% in the first quarter of this year. That's the biggest drop since tracking began since 1947. And when we have rise in productivity, but a drop in average workers' hourly wages, in plain English, it means your paychecks are shrinking, but the profit at the other end for the corporations is increasing. But we're not sharing in that success. Now, I want you to hear something. I'm going to do a little comment on Bill O'Reilly. And not just Bill O'Reilly, but Sean Hannity and Mark Levin and so many people who believe that the problem in America is that people are lazy, especially people of color. And O'Reilly has made it a point repeatedly, and not just made it a point, he has been one decimal short of psychopathic in presenting it, that it's pregnant, single-parent black teenagers that are the problem. And if only we had fathers for those children, and if only we had a dress code in schools, then we wouldn't have the problem of black-on-black crime, black crime, and black incarceration. I can't tell you how offended spiritually and intellectually I am by hearing these kinds of what I consider lunatic rants. But it doesn't just concern Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. It concerns their audience. First, we're going to give you a clip from MSNBC's Chris Hayes, who is challenging O'Reilly. Then I will offer my challenges as well.
The other side of the race conversation, the side not interested in understanding the causes of racial tension, resentments, and frustrations in this country, the side that doesn't want to hear about history because history was yesterday, and it's annoying to have to think about. You probably missed Bill O'Reilly's super racist rant last night, but here are some choice bits that give you an overall sense of the full 7-minute, 35-second screed.
Young black men commit homicides at a rate 10 times greater than whites and Hispanics combined. Right now, about 73% of all black babies are born out of wedlock. White people don't force black people to have babies out of wedlock. But the entertainment industry encourages the irresponsibility by marketing a gangsta culture. When was the last time you heard the Congressional Black Caucus say that? How about Jackson and Sharpton? How about President Obama? You want a conversation? You got it. You want a better situation for blacks? Give them a chance to revive their neighborhoods and culture.
See, amidst all that vitriol, Bill O'Reilly only wants to create a better situation for blacks. But according to him, it's liberals, people like you and me, who are ignoring the problems facing African Americans.
Go to Detroit and ask anyone living on the south side of the 8 Mile Road what destroyed their city. They will tell you narcotics. They know addiction leads to crime and debasement. But what do the race hustlers and limousine liberals yell about? the number of black men in prison for selling drugs. Oh, it's so unfair. It's a nonviolent crime, and blacks are targeted. That is one of the biggest lies in the history of this country.
Just so we're all clear on this, that is not a lie. That's something tangible, knowable. In fact, it's something we know. White people and black people use drugs at virtually the same rate. In fact, I'm sure Bill O'Reilly knows white people who use drugs. Maybe Bill O'Reilly uses drugs for all I know. But here's the thing. Black people go to prison for something as simple as marijuana possession more than 4 times as much as white people. That is a true thing about the world, full stop. And if you want further proof about the real cause of long-term harm to urban youth that Bill O'Reilly seems so concerned about, you need to look at the results of a jaw-dropping 2-decade-long study begun in 1989 at the peak of the crack cocaine epidemic in Philadelphia. Researchers tracked literal crack babies from birth to adulthood to see if exposure to drugs in utero harmed their development. The years of tracking kids have led researcher to a conclusion that she did not see coming. Poverty is a more powerful influence on the outcome of inner city children than gestational exposure to cocaine. In other words, poverty is worse for kids than crack. I don't know if Bill O'Reilly is aware that everything he's saying is easily debunked with about 20 minutes of Googling, but that's not really the point. The real reason Bill O'Reilly peddles this stuff is because it gives a cheap, crack-like high to the old, fearful white audience that watches Bill O'Reilly and gives Fox News its power, also known as the Republican base. These are the folks Bill O'Reilly is feeding when he laments not being able to criticize black culture.
That's because race hustlers and the grievance industry have intimidated the so-called conversation, turning any valid criticism of African-American culture into charges of racial bias.
I am not entirely sure what the singular African-American culture is. Bill O'Reilly is very sure. In fact, he's so sure when he encounters African-Americans who don't conform to his vision of their culture, he is amazed. Listen to how he described a trip to a soul food restaurant in Harlem.
It wasn't one person in Sylvia's who was screaming, MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Please.
You know, I mean, everybody was, it was like going into an Italian restaurant in an all-white suburb in the sense of people were sitting there and they were ordering and having fun and it wasn't any kind of craziness at all.
Further proof that Bill O'Reilly has, let's say, a limited view of African-American culture. Oh, look, they're eating with utensils. But it's also proof that if Bill O'Reilly is representative of white culture, with his stereotyping and his victim blaming and his domineering tone, then I'm pretty sure we need to start having a natural conversation about the problems with white culture. When we come back, I'll show you what it looks like when the mindset of Bill O'Reilly gets turned into actual policy and what that does to young black men in the biggest city in the country.
Now, I've been traveling for the last 5 years around the United States, as this audience knows, producing 2 documentaries specifically. One is called Poverty Inc. The other is called Getting Old in America. And frequently now they're meshed together. Here's what Bill O'Reilly is not looking at, nor the people like Sean Hannity or Mark Levin. It is not about dressing in a uniform, nor is it about, because when I went to school, no one dressed in a uniform, nor is it about having a father. That's not the real issue. When O'Reilly said, what is the single reason that, you know, we have all this massive crime in Detroit, it's not about drugs. It's about the complete destruction of their economic base. Quite simply, starting with the hedge funds and the equity partnerships that took over different companies, started to realize it was cheaper to make a car in China or South Korea and India and Brazil than it was in Detroit. You didn't have to pay the $43 an hour, including health care costs, if you did it in these other countries. So that's what the actual cause was. I've been to Detroit dozens of times. I've premiered at least 10 different specials on PBS in Detroit. I've had a chance to go and help the people of Detroit. I spend time there. I don't know if Bill O'Reilly has walked the streets I have. I've walked the streets of Camden, New Jersey. I've gone to every poor place in the United States, alone, talking with my camera. You'll see all this in the upcoming documentary. Thousands of people interviewed. NBC's recent story on how 80% of Americans will be living at or near the poverty level in their lifetimes. And this is now the new poor white family. If you're going to condemn blacks based upon teenage girls being pregnant without fathers, and that leads to the problem, then Bill, you've missed the whole point. We're not looking at poor blacks. We're looking at not poor whites. We're looking at poor almost everybody now in the United States. The heart of the APA report on the further economic impairment of the American people is focused on the rise of what is called white poverty. I didn't hear you mention that, Bill, and the struggles faced by the white working class in the time of the Great Recession. Now, according to Chauncey DeVega, images that feature human beings' work in communicating political and social meaning because of how the viewer reads them. As such, they are stated and unstated assumptions which the person who is seeing applies to the object of their gaze. For example, the white gaze views a photo of a young black man wearing a hoodie and whose pants are sagging and sees a person who exists in a state of criminality and is a social predator. A photo of a white man wearing a suit and walking down Wall Street in New York will be seen as by the white gaze as representing the respectable person and a hardworking person living the American dream. In reality, the former may be on the way to a third job that day, has never been in prison or arrested, and takes care of his aged parents and siblings. The latter could be a child molesting murderer and rapist who is also embezzling millions of dollars from his clients. White male and whiteness, more generally, views itself as benign and harmless. Black and male and blackness, more generally, is viewed by white American society as dangerous and pathological. The power of images is how they harness and channel assumptions about how various types of personhood find representation in and are configured by a broader social system of dominance, subordination, privilege, inclusion, exclusion, and hierarchy. Bill, did I forget something? Is it not true that more than 5 million people in New York have been stopped and searched? Is it not also true 500,000 occurred last year? Is it not also true that over 91% of those are African American or people of color and Latino? Is it not also true that 90% of those people had committed no crime and had no drugs on them? And yet they're now in a data system. Even if they were released without a ticket or anything, they're now considered criminal property. Now, what would happen, Bill, if 90% of all white Americans were stopped and frisked as they went into ball games, into a theater, into a Broadway show? Would you be talking about it? And who would you blame? This is about racism, and this is about how our perceptions of a person by color alone then define who that person is in our mind. Stereotypes serve as cognitive shortcuts which the viewer and we as a society use to categorize and evaluate the relative worth of whole groups of people. The way that images of white poor female and white overweight and unattractive bodies are processed by the viewer is a reflection of how we as a society think about race, class, and gender. Have I not seen on the internet 100 times people showing photographs of people shopping at Walmart? Are these not almost always people that seem to be poor white trash? So therefore, if you're shopping at Walmart and if you're overweight, you're white trash. If you're shopping at Walmart and you have inappropriate attire on, you're white trash. But how many times have we seen people in the Hamptons decked out in the most garish of costumes? How many times have we seen people who've had distorted plastic surgery and still pimp themselves out to society to get some kind of recognition? And yet because they're wealthy or successful, we don't give them the same type of stereotypical image in our mind. If you have a young black person dressed in a certain way hanging with a white person, it's viewed one way. If you have an older white man with two young blondes on their arm, suddenly it's, oh, that man must be rich enough to afford those women. We're biased, extremely biased. Consequently, poor white people are one of the few groups which can be made fun of and mocked in American culture without consequences or public sanction. Whole television series are based upon mocking poor whites. Why don't you talk about that? White elites and opinion leaders do not want to talk about poor white people because that would expose the defects of capitalism. These same elites also avoid discussing white poverty because it would undermine how they have historically been able to mine white supremacy to mask inner class conflict and exploitation among whites in the United States. Race is how class is lived in America. Consequently, the leaders in the black and brown community care about poverty as a general issue because it disproportionately impacts people of color. White privilege extends to all white people in America. Black and brown folk have to deal with both the color line and other types of inequality in American society. Moreover, and I do believe black and brown elites are more correct than not in this choice and instinct, there's a deep belief, one hard taught by American history, that poor and working class whites will consistently choose to serve the interests of rich white people because of the psychic wages that are paid to them by whiteness. As such, why focus the limited political capital on the black and brown community in a time of crisis on solving the white problem? Poor and working class whites may have much more in common with poor and working class people of color, but their greatest allegiance is doing the work of white racism against their own immediate class instincts. From Bacon's Rebellion forward, with some notable deviations, this has been one of the key themes in American history. However, the new white poor are not the stereotypes drawn from the exploitative TV shows, not the Honey Boo Boo, not the poor white southern farmer, and I've interviewed hundreds of them. They are the former middle-class, non-college-educated whites or college-educated who worked in skilled trades or at low-level municipal and public functionaries. Many of these are invisible as they couch surf with friends or move back into their aging parents' or other relatives' homes. Bill, how many white Americans with college educations, with MBAs, with engineering degrees from NASA, and from Cape Canaveral are now living with their parents in garages and homes? Why don't you pay attention to them? And how many of their teenage sons or daughters are pregnant without a person to care for them, but they, you don't hear about them? Why? Because they've been absorbed into this giant cave of over 40 million living, but not on the streets. But I've been on the streets, Bill. I did an award-winning documentary this past year on American veterans forgotten and betrayed. I found 16,000, mainly Caucasian whites, living in Florida alone with no one caring for them. Where were you, Bill? Haven't I heard you talk about our brave veterans, Sean Hannity, and the rest of you wrapping the flag around you in some self-righteous way of justifying our aggressive stance and genocidal activities around the world? Where were you when they had nothing to eat, nothing to drink, when they didn't have medical attention? Where were you, you self-righteous person, when it came time to sticking a hand out and helping one of these people with a sleeping bag or some clothes or some socks or some toilet paper? You were nowhere to be found because you don't go into where the others of us who care about society go. We go into their homes, their hearts, and whether it's a camp, a tent, or the forest, or someone's couch that they're sleeping on, that's where the reality of your argument loses all of its credibility. You think that this is about black teenagers being pregnant without a husband? This is about poverty in America. And you're afraid to touch that because if you open the doors that exist, you would see aging people that never did anything wrong, never did drugs, never committed a crime, who now have to eat cat food, and there are millions of them. How bad is it, Bill? Well, I'll tell you how bad it is. Here are the statistics you chose not to focus upon. According to the Associated Press last month, found 4 in 5 adults, that's 80% of all adults in the United States, are struggling with joblessness, near poverty, and reliance on welfare for parts of their lives. Are they bums? Are they criminals? Should they be demonized? Should you rally against them, Bill, with a torrent of anger that you seem so capable of turning on and off? More conservative U.S. Census puts 1 in 6 Americans living in poverty as we speak. Let me just give you an idea of how serious that is. That's 146 million Americans now classified as poor, low income. 57% of these are children. And the majority of those have parents, two parents. So if the majority of children are living with parents, but they are black and white, why didn't you pay attention to them? They are the majority. 50% of households are food insecure. 8.4% of all seniors are insecure. That's over 12 million people, Bill. That's more than live in New York City. 29.2% of African-American households with children are food insecure, and that's with a mother and father. So even mother and fathers who are black or Latino who are both working still don't have enough money because they're paid so low by the very corporate sponsors that you shill for on Fox News, and you and Hannity and the rest of you shill for, that they can't even feed their kids. But are you concerned about them? Your argument is worthless. The worst states for food insecurity are Mississippi, Arkansas, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, and California. Now, the latest report shows that the highest percentage of unemployed in low-wage work in the United States is 25%. That means that we have more low-paid people in the United States that are actually working, not unemployed, but underemployed, than any other country. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, based upon household expenses, poverty in the United States is now no longer in the lower half. It's now creeping in. How do we know that? The figure says it all. A family making $60,000 a year will have income taxes and other taxes of $15,000, food, housing, and transportation, another $30,000. That's $50,000. Now, that doesn't touch education, health care, doesn't touch any of those. And what that means is they can't even pay their credit card debt. So now we have the new poor. And that takes up to 80% of the population. And during Obama's first term, median family net worth dropped from $126,000 to $77,000 in 3 years. That's according to Federal Reserve figures. And according to the National Federation of Independent Businesses figures, 40% of unemployed Americans have been unemployed for over 6 months. And they're making less than $10 an hour. Exactly how are Americans supposed to de-ghettoize America if they don't have the money to feed them their children, to clothe themselves, to get an education, to buy books to read? How are they supposed to do it? You'd make us think that the only problem we have in America are poor black teenagers who are on drugs. You're wrong. In fact, according to the U.S. Census Bureau bill, 20% of all children, every child in the United States, is living in poverty. And this figure increased to 25% and predicts it's going to go to 50% in the next few years. Now, here's a figure that you should be aware of, Bill, but you're not. The poor third world countries, we know that children live on less than $2 a day. How many children in the United States, Bill, who are white, live on less than $2 a day? 2.8 million. 2.8 million on less than $2 a day. In Detroit, 60% of children live in poverty. And it's not because they're black. And it's not because they have single parents. And it's not because of drugs. It's because there's no work, no infrastructure. There's no capacity for them to get out of that poverty. 45% of kids living in the United States have inadequate housing, and reading and math scores are categorically lower in those children. And the USDA now determines that these kids are undernourished. How many undernourished kids are there? And the majority of them are white. 18 million children go to bed hungry each day in the United States, Bill. 18 million. Now, specifically on African Americans, according to the latest results, they suffer a higher disproportion of poverty than any other group in the United States except the Native Americans. So when you're looking at actual figures, be accurate in what you're reporting. The poverty rate for African Americans is now 26% of all African Americans. Now, here's something that you didn't talk about. According to the latest Economic Partnership and Development, African American women have continued to increase in educational attainment more rapidly than white women, yet they are proportionally in service industry low-paying jobs, 25% for African Americans, 15% for equally trained women who are white. So we have more African American women, including single mothers, who are going back to school, getting the education, but the jobs are not there for them and the paying jobs are not there. Therefore, they cannot get themselves out of poverty. But they're trying, and they're trying in spite of people like yourself who are hypocrites, and your comments are so blatantly racist that it's an embarrassment you're on and your audience listens to you. The Target Marketing Group in 2004, African Americans had collective purchases of including $22 billion in clothing, $10 billion in furniture, $28 billion in cars, $14 billion in phone services. And yet, in spite of that, today they have to work twice as hard to make the same amount of money. That's why the purchasing is down. If you don't have the money at the end of the day to take home, you can't invest that in your home, in your community. And the black unemployment rate has gone up faster than the white unemployment rate. And also, for African-American children, the poverty rate is 37.4%. The rate of Hispanics is 34.1%. The average rate of whites is 12%. But they all have something in common. They are all getting poorer. And until we recognize that it is capitalism, your form of capitalism, biased, bigoted, and racist, and that you never go into a factory and show what people are actually making. You never follow someone through a day and see how many jobs they have to go to. You never see how hard it is for a family that has a mother and father to take care of themselves and their children in a hostile environment without anyone helping them. And yet you would consider these people bums. You would consider them lazy. You would consider them to be worthless to the social contract. You are so wrong. And those are my thoughts. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. And oh, by the way, Bill, from Global Research, quote, people living in caves as the UK homelessness reaches a five-year high. Homeless men and women are living in a network of disused sandstone caves near towns because they have not any place else to live. So we reverted to people living in caves. These are mostly white people, Bill, with families. And where does the middle class that you herald so importantly? Why don't you talk about where it stands? According to the latest information, quote, how does the United States middle class rank globally? We're 27th in the world, Bill. Thank you all for listening. Now let's say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Wow, my headset here is smoking. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Utrece.
It's very, very good that you brought these facts out. Really good. Today we're talking about the spying power of corporations and President Obama and the banksters.
Great. Utrece Lead, right now, please stay with us.